Okay, let's move on to the second presenter. It's not really necessary to announce her because I think we all know about it from the emails that we received. I'm sure you all received an email or two from her. De Villiers is a PhD candidate in the Department of Systematic Theology and Ecclesiology here at Stellenbosch. And she's working particularly on Hannah Arendt and more from a philosophical perspective. So, Patrick, welcome, and we look forward to your paper. So let's welcome.
Thank you so much, Chair. As you've heard, I'm doing my PhD in systematic theology at the Faculty of Theology, but I'm focusing on somebody who is in actual fact, a philosopher. A German-American social thinker and philosopher called Hannah Arendt. And she found herself as a stateless, and which would imply that in our modern political society, as rightless. So she found herself as a rightless person after fleeing from the Second World War Europe to America, where she was only granted permanent citizenship after 10 years. This experience, along with her work with wartime refugees, forced her to reflect on the changing modern political landscape that was taking place. She reinvestigates the difference between universal human rights present within humanity and the state law rights that are awarded to individual citizens. And she concludes that it is preferable to rather refer to all people's rights to have rights. So therefore, in my following paper entitled The Right to Have Rights, Engaging Theologically with Hannah Arendt in a Pluralistic Society, I would like to explore Arendt's explication of human rights by focusing firstly on her understanding of the changing political sphere of her time, but is still showing some extant characteristics in ours. Secondly, to investigate her concepts of what she hears about the terms universal human rights and state law rights. And then thirdly, look at a work and hope to find something of a new form, an alternative viewpoint, a new alternative philosophical, theological, or general view via her concept, the right to have rights, on human fundamental human rights in modern pluralist societies. So firstly, a bit of a background. As a Jewess who was born and bred in Germany in 1906 in Hannover, the German-American political theorist and philosopher Hannah Arendt lived through and was profoundly influenced by both the First and Second World Wars, wars that shook the very foundation of world politics. With the start of her philosophical studies in 1924 at Marburg University, she meets and befriends the German existence philosopher Martin Heidegger, whose work and whose friendship and ideas would come to have a huge impact on her philosophical and her political formation. During Heidegger's years as the rector of Freiburg University, his support for the Nazi regime became more apparent. And this placed his friendships and his work under worldwide scrutiny, which in turn brought the Jewish friend Hannah Arendt under scrutiny as well. And it is at this time, at this point in her life, that Arendt is inducted into the world of Jewish Zionist politics, and she becomes involved in Zionist movements and discussions and activities. Therefore, when the Nazi regime starts to flourish in Berlin in 1933, Arendt's so-called various unpatriotic activities forces her to flee to Paris, and for the first time, she finds herself as a stateless person. From Paris, she would then help to transport Jews to the homeland of Palestine, but with the declaration of war between France and Germany in 1940, Arendt and her husband are forced to set sail to America, where they subsequently settle in New York. Here she continues her work and interests with special focus on the atrocities of the concentration and extermination camps in Germany, as well as other human rights violations of the war in Europe. It is only in 1951, 18 years after first leaving Germany, that Hannah Arendt receives her American citizenship. For the first time in 18 years, she belongs to a state. And is she able to make herself at home in a community? At home in a country where, as she states it, she has the freedom to be a state citizen without having to pay the price of assimilation. Living through such dark, albeit very interesting times, Hannah Arendt responds to the crisis of her times and the happenings of her times by evaluating and re-evaluating political theory. She comes to identify Nazism and Stalinism, which at that stage was the two disruptive political phenomena of the times, as totalitarianism, a terror-based socio-political system that makes use of indoctrination and coercion to rob persons of their innate humanness, which she specifies is individuality and the freedom for spontaneous thought and action within a community. Arendt found the examples of her friend Martin Heidegger and the example of Adolf Eichmann, who was an officer in charge of transporting the Jews to extermination camps in Europe. She was also the reporter for the New Yorker magazine in Jerusalem in 1961 when he was standing trial. And she finds the example of Adolf Eichmann and the example of Martin Heidegger to be prime examples of the influence of such a totalitarian regime. Looking at the war and its atrocities that people could never imagine, taking the indoctrination of people as well educated as Heidegger into account, and identifying the banal, unthinking coercion of key players like Eichmann, she comes to the conclusion that totalitarianism is a novel form of government, the likes of which had no historical precedent. Where the past and its traditions and thoughts could and should be used to generally help illuminate present situations, totalitarianism showed that such historical paradigms were no longer of use. Arendt then set out to deconstruct the essence of this regime and the effects its ideology had on political theory of the day, as well as the people within its system, to help form new political paradigms with which to address the modern political arena. New paradigms regarding politics, the role of the state, and the enforcement of human rights had to be envisioned for the ever-changing present and future. Universal rights or civic rights, she asks, rather the right to our rights. Since the 18th century, with the occurrence of the French Revolution and the Declaration of the Rights of Man and Citizen, human rights have been espoused as naturally inalienable parts of humanity. The source of humanity was no longer necessarily attributed to God or an external godhead or a moral figure. Wasn't also attributed to any external law per se, but it was attributed to the human itself. Rights were therefore seen as universal and eternal, to be found wherever humanity was, and all persons would be protected and defended by them. Even before this period, Arendt writes in her Origin of Totalitarianism that what we must call a human right today would have been thought of as a general characteristic of the human condition, which no tyrant could take away. End quote. Famous last words. Laws would not be needed to enforce and protect these human rights, but would rather be based on them. And yet, these universal rights present in humanity, from humanity, was shown to be a bit more abstract in nature, not focusing on the individual as such, but rather on a general concept of humanity, the so-called people. It seemed that for an individual reinforcement of these rights, these specific people in question, had to belong to a group that would deem it important to enforce and protect this natural inalienable right if it were to come under threat. the nation state, according to Arendt, was born to be just such a group. Through the endowment of legal and political status, the government provided their citizens with protection of their rights. For Arendt, this leads to a very problematic occurrence, namely the conflation of universal human rights and civic rights. Universal human rights, which are considered inalienable, as we have said, became controlled by the political system of the state through civic rights, and could only be guaranteed within that specific political community. The state thus becomes, to a certain extent, the protector and distributor of the nation's rights. If you were stateless, you were therefore rightless. Now, for the many who view the nation state and its modern democratic government, as we like to call it, as steadfast and unchangeable, that provides present and future stability, security, freedom to its people, that creates a community of equals, these would not question the state's involvement to such a degree with regards to human and civil rights. In fact, it would be seen as for the best. But Arendt contends that many extant characteristics of totalitarianism reside in such a political system, and that such thinking regarding rights is not demanding enough. Civil rights, although they do incorporate fundamental universal human rights, are not enough to secure the rightfulness of individuals, even within their own states. If we wish to bring about a deepening change with regards to the practice of human rights, perhaps it's good to reflect on what we think it means to be rightless. For Arendt, the key to this discussion lies in the rightful appearance of individuals through speech and action in a community of equals, all struggling together for a context-appreciative common good. What does that mean to her? It means a meaning for human life, this common good, for that context. And it is changeable as the context changes. As humans, she says, we receive much of our identity by expressing our uniqueness to others. Through this appearance to fellow humans, we receive the opportunity to express not only the what of myself, my gender, my race, my language, but the who of who I am. And we do so by using our capacity for speech to voice our opinions, our ideas of what we envision for our context appreciative common good. To be rightless, she says, is therefore to be deprived of a place in the world, whether it is a state or a community, where this speech and opinion can be voiced, where your contribution is of no significance. Our uniqueness and individuality, our humanness, goes by without appearance to others, and it is therefore as if we never existed. We therefore also have no capacity to act. Arendt sees action as that which goes on, and I quote, directly between men without the intermediary of things or matter. Action for Arendt is therefore the pure appearance of human to human, an unadulterated moment of expression of opinion, of identity, of ideas. But if there is no forum for this action to take place, then, and there is no moment for speech, then we cannot identify ourselves, our insights, our opinions, our contexts, our experiences. We cannot bring them to one another. As a side note, Arendt is prominent in saying that she still feels that our democratic system as we see it is not democratic enough, because we do not have this forum for people's opinions and people's speech, and that's often why laws and constitutions do not rhyme, for instance, with what people do in the public and private sphere. She says through this, not being able to express ourselves, not being able to be in our world, we lose touch with humanity, we lose touch with reality, and she says, most importantly, we are deprived of something truly fundamental to our beings, being able to help build our own world. As history has shown, there is no guarantee that either abstract universal human rights or state-based civil rights can ensure each individual's fundamental right to appearance through speech and action. But what then can ensure this fundamental human right? Not what, but who, says Arendt. Humanity. Only we, not as a group, but as one human to another, can ensure our right to have rights. What does this mean in a pluralist society? Arendt uses the phrase the right to have rights to indicate the shift in focus of the source of human rights. She says it is not to be found in an abstract idea of humanity. It is even not to be found in looking to God or a moral entity that leads and guides us. It's also not found in state laws that focus on governance. She provides a third option, a context-based individual. This is what the right to have rights means, the source of human rights. Through right to have rights means she provides a context-based individual who acknowledges him or herself to be a person of right and enforces every other individual's right to mutually equal rights. Not only is the context-based humanity the source of the human rights, but also the enforcer and protector thereof. Hannah Arendt makes it quite clear that our modern democratic understanding of human rights might be hindering our process to move away from a totalitarian-filled history to a more politically active community. A community of speech and action. A community of participation and responsibility. We have a responsibility to each other and ourselves to enable mutual sharing of opinions and actions, and in so doing to affect in each an enlarged mentality, which you get from Kant, of what it means to be human. Such a mentality can only take place within a pluralist society where a multitude of opinions and backgrounds help us to form our thinking and assist us in appreciating and understanding one another regardless of national affiliation, religious conviction, or political distinction. Our rights are therefore not based on structures, but on a decision of a guarantee to ourselves, to the right to have mutually equal rights. Seeing as any and all structures that we could employ to enforce human rights are man-made, human-made, and can be changed by human command, Arendt says this earnest guarantee is in effect the only thing that we can really offer each other that is worth. By giving such a guarantee, we admit to ourselves and to each other that we realize that we need one another to be able to be. Without another to whom we can appear and act through speech, Arendt says, I do not fully exist. Arendt touches upon something, and I'd like to end with this. She touches upon something that we Africans, I think of as Ubuntu. And I'd like to quote the piece that Professor Dreyer has also quoted this morning. And I think Arendt would agree with the words of Desmond Tutu. A person of Ubuntu, or a person of who believes in the right to have rights, as Arendt quoted, is affirming of others based from a proper self-assurance that comes knowing that he or she belongs in a greater whole and is diminished when others are diminished. Perhaps in this way, Arendt can help us in thinking about the future of human rights in Africa.
And they're not out there, they're here. So let's just maybe one question. I'm sure you must have questions.
I'd like to just underline when we talk about rights, when we separate it from responsibility, we have a problem. And basically, to sum it up, we must agree to disagree without being disagreeable and give people opportunity to express what they're thinking, what they're feeling, and what action they would like to do. But to submit that to one another. I just want to, I think the most important thing is, it's not structure, it's relationships. First with the Lord and with one another. But to really humbly walk before God and not forget him in the discussion. And really submit it to him. And then to one another. But enjoy being at the freedom to express what I really think. And not try to bluff you or make you feel happy about what I think.
Can I react to that shortly? If we think about the time in which Hannah Arendt wrote this, it was during the time of the Second World War. Right after that, she's a Jewess, and religion has been used, or was used in that time, this idea of God giving me human rights, but only for my group, or only for my religious group. And that really went against the grain for her, because she says, then what you're trying to do is assimilate. You're not trying to go for a pluralistic society, you're trying to go for a society that will do and say whatever you like. And she believes, like Kant to a certain extent, that we do meet God if you believe in a God. She doesn't really care which one. But if that is the one that centers you in your relationship, and not in the structures, not expecting the law to provide a people with dignity or to affirm the dignity that they have. But if that God helps you then to be centered in your knowledge that you are a person with dignity and therefore you are responsible for the others, she says, then that is the best thing that could be for society.
I'd like to add another word, that's respect for the other person. And the Ten Commandments, really, if you look at it, it's the whole time. Respect the other person. Don't be jealous of him. Don't take his wife. Don't steal from him.
Yeah.
But with me, we tend to think that the right, human rights means me. It's not. God is encouraging us. It's the right of the other person.
Because you can't live without that other person. And therefore, if they have no rights, you have no rights.
Thank you very much for your presentation and also the earlier one. One of the things that seemed to come out from your paper and the question that I asked, just to link it up with the other, is how universal is Ubuntu? Because when trying to approach it from African perspective, my experiences here. So, yet, when you speak about Hannah Arendt's work, there's an element of all of this in there. And so, I don't know if this is a question, but I was listening also to Peter's earlier point and his questions about our constitution and how that can all go wrong and so on. And I wonder if we approach our constitution from, I don't know what to call it, Ubuntu philosophy, the Ubuntu thing.
Or the right to have rights.
And the right to have rights. Where does those questions then go? Do we not have in South Africa at least a situation where our constitution is providing a certain amount of guidance to the right, to have rights?
Yes. I think also with Ubuntu and constitutionality, especially now focusing on Arendt because that's all I know, it's to have that is to not be structureless. I mean, we do need guidance, we do need people of knowledge to help us informing our thinking, not enforcing it, but helping us to say maybe we should move in this direction or move in this direction. So structures are needed, But perhaps what is important is that we realize that we have a unique society with a context that has different common good than perhaps other political systems. And our constitutional rights are not thinking of human rights. Our politics needs to adapt to that. And that's where, hopefully, a different angle of saying, well, maybe if we step back and look at human rights and the constitution and the enforcement of law from a different perspective, we can see the change in nuance from state infrastructure to personal responsibility. Does that answer?
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Wahid. I'm sure you're going to produce a wonderful thesis in the end, if this is the quality of work. So thank you very much.